The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to be joined on the program today by Mark Hamer. He's on the telephone in the nation of Wales. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Vic. Nice to speak to you.
Mark, I have been waiting to talk to you for at least 6 months. I got an advance copy of your book, which just came out this week, and I was so excited about that book, and I still am. I just love this book. It's called How to Catch a Mole and Find Yourself in Nature. And when I first picked it up, I said, what on earth is this? and then I started reading it. I was like, do I really want to know about catching moles? But then you caught me, Mark.
Oh, good.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You've had a very interesting life, and we learn a lot about it in this memoir.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose the story starts when I was about 16 years old. My mother died and my father threw me out onto the streets. So I spent a little time kind of sofa surfing, looking for somewhere to live, staying with friends until I outstayed my welcome. And I kind of decided to just start walking. So I started walking through the countryside and I carried on walking for nearly 2 years, sleeping rough, sleeping under hedges and walking across mountain tops and basically just living wild out in the countryside. And I kind of developed a relationship with the environment, really, and with the weather, and came to love it very, very deeply. And we move on sort of several years now, many years now, and I came back to nature as a gardener many years later and ended up catching moles as part of my business. You know, I thought gardening might be quite a nice idyllic thing to do, but it turned out there is an awful lot of pests to deal with, an awful lot of creatures and plants and things that are not wanted in people's gardens, and it turned out to be my job to do something about them. So I ended up catching moles, and I spent the many, many winters, because over here mole catching season is during the winter, and I spent many winters out in farms and in large country gardens doing just that, catching moles.
How did you learn how? Because you became a traditional mole catcher, which yeah. is apparently now a vanished art.
It very much so. I mean, I learned how, first of all, by as a young man, sitting on hillsides watching them and trying to figure out their movements and trying to understand what they were doing. And then much later on, talking to old mole catchers. And there was a farmer I got to know quite well. I remember leaning across his fence and talking about it. And he showed me a tunnel which was underneath a fence by the side of his farm. And he said, there's a mole tunnel there. And this farmer must have been in his 70s, perhaps. And he said, there's a tunnel under there, and I've been catching moles in that tunnel since I was a lad, you know. And he taught me quite a lot about catching moles. And then I kind of went on and practiced and learned how to do it myself. I think one of the things was that as a gardener, I saw mole catchers coming in, and it appeared to me to be quite a brutal thing to be doing. And I didn't feel comfortable with it at all. And I thought, I'm going to go away and find out the best way of dealing with the moles in people's gardens. So I did lots and lots of research and looked up all the different traps you could find and all the deterrents and all the different ways of dealing with them, thinking that perhaps I could do it in a little more humanely than I had seen it being done. In the end, it turned out the only way to deal with them humanely was to use very strong, very powerful, very fast traps that killed them.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Mark Hamer. His memoir, How to Catch a Mole and Find Yourself in Nature, just came out in the U.S., but it's been out in the U.K., and from what I'm seeing from your Twitter feed, it's out in some other countries, too. This is very exciting. Did you even imagine that you, number one, would write a book like this, and number two, that people would say, wow, we love this book?
I've always been a writer. I've always liked to write. I used to write poetry and still do a little bit, and short stories and things like that. But it came to me very much later on to think I was actually going to turn this into a book. And also, it came to me much later to think that my writing was good enough to be published in a book, really. So I spent one winter working on the book and sent it off to an agent, and it kind of exploded into the whole of Europe. It's in 16 languages, I think, now. Every now and again, something arrives in the post, and I've had a Romanian copy that just came across a couple of days ago, and you know, and it's lovely to just see them.
Let's explain to our listeners how you decided to structure the book, because it has a definite structure.
Yeah. I think... When I first started writing it, it was a book that was it was about the daily task of going out into the fields and hunting down the moles, finding tunnels, what the weather was like, what the nature was like around me. So it was a kind of step by step thing through the process of looking for moles, of finding their tunnels, of why you do this and not that, and how you actually. So there is actually, through the book, full set of instructions of how to go and find tunnels and set mole traps and catch moles. But also above that, there was a layer of what it felt like to be doing this, what it felt like to be out, because I could go into the farms and the fields, and I could not see another human being for 3 or 4 days, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was quite an isolated thing as well. So there was what it felt like to do that, which seemed like a sensible thing. You know, because I'd like to write poetry, some of that came into it as well. You see what it feels like to do this, what it feels like to be in nature, working with these things and working with the animals and just being there and sharing space with them and in silence, you know, day after days of silence, really. So that came along. And then there was, I kind of realized at one point that the story I was telling, which I hadn't planned to tell, but I kind of realized that I was in a way telling part of my own life story. This, you know, the mold being hidden under the ground and me being out in the country, being hidden from other human beings. And then there's a part in a mole's life where it's when it's very young, it gets pushed out of its tunnel and has to go and find its own way. And as soon as I'd written that bit, and, you know, and I thought, oh my Lord, I'm writing my own story here.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I hit that point, I kind of backtracked through the whole book and started looking for parallels of. And at this point, I wasn't even thinking of sending it off to be published. I was just actually enjoying the exploration and enjoying the journey of writing this thing and putting it all together and finding its rhythms and its meanings and things like that. And eventually it just kind of built layer upon layer upon layer to be what it is today, which is, to me, it's an odd thing. I mean, I enjoy it. I still like it as a thing because it has got those little layers in it and little nuances. And I look at it, I mean, just before I come to talk to you, I just thought I'll have a quick look, because it's 2 years since I finished writing this book, and I thought I'd just have a quick little look. And I'm reading bits and I think, oh God, I've forgotten about that, and you know, I really enjoyed that, and so I'm enjoying it again now, actually, talking to people.
Give me an example of something you just noticed that you forgot.
Well, I was just thinking, I was looking out at the weather here and the rain coming down, and I opened the book up, and I came to this part here, which there's in the north of England where I walked. There's a hill which is very famous in those parts. It's called Pendle Hill, and there's an Iron Age burial mound on it. And I remembered a time when the heavens opened. There was an absolute storm. I'm homeless at this point. I have nothing but the pack on my back. And the heavens opened, and the skies went black, and there's thunder and lightning coming down on the hill, and there's water running off the hill down the old stone tracks and things. So I kind of huddle down, and I've got a blanket, and I've got a tarpaulin, and I hide behind the dry stone wall, very old dry stone wall, and wrap the blanket around me and the tarpaulin around me, and just leave a little slit for my eyes and my mouth so I can breathe. And I kind of remember thinking it was one of the most beautiful, beautiful things I'd ever seen in my life, because I watched it through the night, so there was no chance of sleeping. but it was also the most loneliest experience, you know, the horribly lonely experience, and a terrifically beautiful one at the same time. And it's like, how do you reconcile those two different things? You know, it was so beautiful and so horribly lonely. Mm. And I kind of came away thinking the two things don't necessarily have to be different, that beautiful, the beautiful things, the beautiful nature, and the loneliness of being in nature. I had lots of lessons like that all the way through my time just wandering around.
I love that. My guest is Mark Hamer. His book is How to Catch a Mole and Find Yourself in Nature. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, Building a More Informed Community with Independent News and Storytelling. And Mark's story is riveting. We're plodding along slowly through the fields, and at the end of each chapter or essay, we get a reward with one of your beautiful poems. And these illustrations, tell me about these illustrations.
The illustrations are beautiful. I didn't do the illustrations. The illustrations are beautiful. I'm so pleased with them. I'm so pleased with the way that the publishers have packaged the whole book. It's very lovely, and it's very respectful as well. The illustrations, I'd taken some photographs, and there's a couple of photographs that are still in the book, and I kind of put them in just to kind of, I don't know, just to kind of illustrate it a little bit, but also to kind of anchor the words into reality. You know, there's a couple of pictures there of things that I found, just so that people looking at it could think, actually, this stuff is actually real. It went to the publishers, and we talked about the photographs. Some of them weren't of very good quality, and they said, how do you feel about having an illustrator? I thought, that sounds like a really nice idea. We're going to look, you know, they said they'd look for somebody to do something like woodcuts and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they came up with about two or three different illustrators and sent me samples of their work and said, what do you think of these? And they were beautiful. They were all beautiful. And I said, my preference is this particular one, and sent it back to them, and they said, brilliant, because that's our preference as well. Whether they sent me one really good one and two ones that they didn't like to force me to choose that one, I don't know. But anyway, together we kind of agreed on this illustrator, and they're delightful little illustrations. So I keep thinking I should have little postcards made of some of them and things like that, because they're absolutely beautiful. Mm. And they're upbeat and lovely, because in the book, I think, on the whole, it's balanced. It goes up and down and up and down in terms of emotion. And I think the illustrations really capture that.
I love how on the cover, the mole has all this gold on it.
Yeah.
That is so beautiful. I am a person who, I'm not a typical American, as in that I don't worship my lawn. I don't spend huge amounts of money making sure that my lawn has no weeds and no moles. And I knew a guy years ago who loved his lawn, and he gets so angry when a mole would come into his lawn. And I'm sure he was typical of your clientele. They wanted to get rid of these moles. I don't mind them.
No.
I am actually happy when I can tell that there's been some mole activity in my yard. And we learned so much about them in your book. It's kind of a secret how to catch them traditionally, right? But as far as their habits, like you found out that male moles and female moles have different ways of making their tunnels.
Well, this is a thing that I was taught when I was younger, that I was always taught that the male moles always went in straight lines. And the female moles wandered around. I don't know how true this is, because it's hard to tell the sex of a mole once you've caught it and looked at it. But there are moles that dig tunnels in straight lines, and there are moles that just wander around seemingly at random. So whether that's the difference between male and females, I don't know. I don't know. But certainly a mythology about them. Whether it's true or not, I have no idea.
We also learn that they are solitary creatures, except when it's time to mate. And as you mentioned earlier, then the young are sent out into the world a very cruel world out there waiting for them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pushed out at about between 6 and 8 weeks old. They've never dug a tunnel at that time in their lives. They've run around their mothers. I mean, they get born, they're mammals, so they suckle. And they run around in the tunnels looking for worms and beetles and things. And then after 6 to 8 weeks, they get pushed out to the surface. So they've never dug a tunnel in their lives. So that there's so much mystery attached to these creatures. Nobody knows how they learn how to dig a tunnel even. They just get pushed to the surface, whether it's an instinctive thing, whether they're just kind of, you know, because they're predated by birds, by crows and owls and all, you know, birds of prey and that, crows and that kind of thing, whether they just find themselves digging down to escape predation, to escape the birds that are attacking them and the foxes and cats and things. Nobody knows really, but they do. They eventually end up building a tunnel system of their own, which they will never ever leave. They will leave it, if they're males, to go and mate with a female, and then they'll come back again. And they'll spend their whole lives in that same place, completely on their own. If they come across another mole, if two tunnel systems accidentally intersect, they will fight, and because they have a very strange blood which doesn't clot, if they're injured, they will bleed to death, so they will fight to the death to protect their territory. Also, what happens is if two tunnel systems come close to each other, they will kind of twitter to each other, like bicycles ringing bells, to make sure they don't crash into each other, and then they turn around and run in the opposite direction so they don't have to meet. So, you know, they're aggressive creatures, but they don't fight unless they kind of come face to face, and they try to very hard to avoid coming face to face. Very curious things. We don't know how they do half the things that they do.
What I love the best about your book is that it's just such a meditative, reflective book. And you're looking at the big picture. You eventually decide, as we get through the book, you give us a warning to begin, but you decide that you've had enough of the mole trapping and you're getting older. You're facing mortality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the day came. I mean, I was getting older. It gets harder as you get older to kneel down on the frozen earth and then get up and move along and kneel down and get up again. It's hard on the knees and it's hard on the back. And I was getting tired of it, but I was continuing to do it. It was my income. It was something that I needed to do. It formed a great part of my income in the winter. And the day came when I pulled a trap out of the ground and there was a mole in it that was still alive. And this hadn't really happened to me before. It was still alive and it was injured. And because of their unique blood and they bleed to death, it would have died and would have bled to death quite slowly. So I had a choice then. I could let it bleed to death quite so slowly or I could finish it off. So I finished it off. Moles have got massive muscles in the back of their heads, the back of their necks, because they have these little paws at the front that dig, and they're very, very powerful creatures. So they're full of muscle, packed with muscle and bone. So, and I had to beat it to death, and it wasn't an easy thing to do, because I kind of distanced myself from the killing that I was doing by doing it with traps. I would dig a hole and put a trap in, and the next day I come along and there's a dead mole in it. And it's like almost like it wasn't me that did it, it was the trap did it kind of thing. But we know the truth of that. But here I was presented with my own hypocrisy really staring me in the face, that I actually was killing these creatures, and I had to actually physically do it and kill it with my hands, beat it with a trowel. And I thought, you know, I was faced with my own kind of hypocritical view of what I was doing. I decided I wasn't going to do it anymore. I thought, that's enough. So I packed my traps away. They're in my garden shed, rusting away. And I stopped doing it, and I haven't done it since.
Mm-hmm. That was the day. My grandfather was a World War I veteran, and he lived to be 96. And he was an avid hunter for most of his life. He went out and shot pheasants and hunted for fish up in Canada, and he's just very avid about it. And then one day I asked him, I said, Grandpa, I said, you're not going out to hunt pheasants this year? And he said, I've had enough killing.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it anymore. He didn't have a stomach for it, and that was a powerful experience for me to hear him say that and to read that in your book, to hear that experience that you just related. We learn how to catch them, but we also learn that catching them has its drawbacks and
yeah, there's a cost, and it's for me, when I spent much of my life living outside, and I kind of feel at one with the birds and the animals and even the trees and the wind and the rivers, and I kind of feel once you've been out there for a length of time, you kind of stop thinking of yourself as an individual and just feel part of it. And then when I got to the point of doing that, I thought, this is part of me. I know it's a massive leap to make, but that's just what it felt like at that moment. It felt like it was part of me, and I was beating it to death. And I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. It didn't feel good. And I thought, that's it. I'm done with killing. And I stopped. I stopped on that very day. That was the last mole I ever caught. I pulled the other traps out of the ground and put them away. And that was about 2 years ago.
Mark Hamer joins us. His memoir is How to Catch a Mole, Wisdom from a Life Lived in Nature. He joins us on the telephone in Wales, where he's the former Cardiff gardener.
That's right.
Is that right?
That is right, yes. I've retired from gardening as well. I'm working on another book now, which is related to that, to the years of doing working in gardens. So I don't do that now. I spend my life now sitting in cafes and writing notes and watching people go by, and it's absolutely lovely.
Another splendid element in this book is your descriptions of going home and going to be with your partner and your time together and just the quiet moments.
Yeah. They're so important, aren't they? You know, when you finish a day's work, no matter what you do, those times of turning home and turning off the day's work, if you can, if you've got the, you know, obviously there's lots of kind of work where it's hard to turn off at the end of a day. I was very lucky in that role that I could just completely switch off at the end of the day. There was nothing for me to worry about. I came home knowing that I would have a glass of whiskey or a cup of tea and sit with my wife and have tea, have dinner, and the next day I would go out and be back in the fields again. It's a lovely part of my life and a lovely part. Just turning home, those simple things, you know, the little banal everyday things, I think, are the very special ones. The big things come along every now and again in a lifetime, don't they? But the little things are there every single day, and you come home and you make them rituals and they become beautiful.
Do you have the book handy there? Is there any way I could talk you into reading one of your poems?
It's called 4 a.m. 4 a.m. I woke in a cold, dark room, unable to breathe from a bad dream in which I couldn't breathe. With distance between us, feeling homeless and full of flight, my head beached on the white pillow like a sand-clogged conch. Breath's tide flows in and out noisily, working through the blocked chambers, drowning. In 2 hours, the heating will click on. In 4 hours, the sun will start to rise. In 5 hours, Peggy will wake up. I look out over the thin winter wood, where buried things will remain buried until the land is full and the houses come, and I feel like I'm drowning. With a click, then a boom, the heating comes on. 2 quick dark hours gone already. I've been watching the stars, cold and distant, yet always there. Did I sleep again? I'm not sure. From a clear, starry night, the unwanted dawn crawls across the rookwood. Beneath the handful of frosted rooftops in the bare-branched wood, the people are waking and scraping their cars. The rooks perch and wait for the warming sun, and I struggle to breathe. Peggy stirs, and her head rolls onto my shoulder, heavy and warm, while the scraping continues and the crows crowd a bare ash. The beetles beetle, and the crows start to crow, and the nearby river, not yet frozen, still runs in its flow, while Peggy's stale morning breath, steady and deep, keeps me anchored with comfort to blanket and pillow. And flow. I think about the flow and try not to drown. Light comes in blinking, and Peggy opens her sticky eyes, and in from chasing wood mice across the frosted grass, my icy cat curls her cold fur against my bare feet. There we are. It's the first poem in the book.
That's another thing I like about you, Mark. You're a cat guy.
I'm a cat guy, very much so, yes.
I could tell.
Absolutely.
The second I read that poem, I said, he's a cat man.
I'm definitely a cat. Batman. Yeah, absolutely. I love the way they come and go, and they're not dependent on me at all. I put some food out, they eat, they come and sit next to me if they want to. They don't. We're buddies. You know, I don't own any animals. I think we just have a relationship.
Uh-huh. How has your life changed since you put away your traps and decided to try this writing thing? How's it different for you?
It's been a lovely, lovely experience. You know, I'm 63 this year, and I've lived lots of different kinds of lives. I've done many different kinds of jobs. I've written since I was very young and never really thought what I'd written had any value, really. But I've written because I've enjoyed it, and it's been my way of exploring my attitude to the world and my thoughts about things. It's just been my way of reflecting. And I sent this thing out, and it's doing quite well. It means that I don't have to go out gardening anymore, which is a lovely thing. And it means that I can completely immerse myself in that world, into just looking out of my window at the world as it goes by and thinking about it and just carrying on writing. I am thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. I'm getting a bit old for going out in the mountains now anyway. As I say, I've been kneeling down for many years, and my knees don't work too good these days. So it's a fabulous life for me now. Absolutely fabulous. I love it to bits.
I saw on Twitter that you posted that you were at the seaside, and were you there on a little junket? Were you there to write? Were you there to watch the hurricane go by? What were you up to?
I was there because my wife's mum lives there, and we went down for a couple of days so she could see her mum. And I just stayed in the hotel and walked on the promenade and sat and basically watched the sea, took lots of photographs. I like to take photographs. And just relaxed with my notebook. So I was writing. The thing is, if you're writing, you never really stop writing. I jump up at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes and go and rush to my desk and write a few notes down and then go back to bed again, you know. Sometimes at my desk between like 4 and 7 in the morning, then I go back to bed and stay there till about 11. I couldn't have done that when I was gardening.
Mm-hmm. You wake up and you say, I've got to write this down before I forget it.
Absolutely.
How's the new book coming? How's the process going for you?
It's going really well. I've just found out today, I don't know if I'm breaking any confidences, but I've just found out today that that is going to be out in the USA as well and Canada. So the same publishers, Greystone Books, are going to be publishing that in a couple of years' time. I'm finished the first draft. I'm well into editing so it's going well. I always said that when I first started doing this, I'm going to write 3 books. And the second one is coming along very nicely, and the third one is being thought about. It's on the back burner.
Well, how exciting. Thank you for telling me that.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to or not, but there it is.
There it is.
It's done.
You heard it here first. My guest has been Mark Hamer. His memoir is How to Catch a Mole, Wisdom from a Life Lived in Nature. And I hope I can have you back for the next book, Mark.
That would be fabulous, Vic.
And hopefully for the third book, too.
Hopefully. Hopefully. The third book is still very much a pipe dream, but I've got ideas for it. But as I say, I'm working very, very hard on the second one at the moment, so that will be fabulous.
Well, enjoy the ride and enjoy the U.S. release and the Romanian release and the Lithuanian release and wherever the book is coming out. That's so exciting. I'm so happy for you.
I'm so happy as well. Thank you ever so much, Vic. Thank you.
And thanks for calling into us today.
No problem whatsoever. It's been a delight. I'll be sure to get in touch when the next one comes out.
Thank you. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Mark Hamer. His book is How to Catch a Mole for The Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis.